Chapter 19. Home at Last. It was 6 months after leaving Elana that, after passing through a portion of Persia, they reached the country inhabited by the scattered tribes known by the name of Medes, to whom the Rebu were related. Jethro and Amuba now felt at home, but they determined that when they reached their own country, they would, until they found how matters were going on there, disguise their identities. They now traveled as Persian traders, having supplied themselves with articles of Persian manufacture. They thus passed on, unquestioned, from village to village, and gradually worked their way north until they arrived at the first Rebu village. Had Jethro been alone, he could at once have declared himself and would have been received with joy as one who had made his way back from captivity in Egypt. But for Amuba, there would have been danger in his being recognized until the disposition of the occupant of the throne was discovered. There would have been small chance of this. Nearly 4 years had elapsed since Amuba had been carried away captive, and he had grown from a boy into a powerful young man. But they still chose caution. Amuba had no desire whatever to occupy the throne of the Rebu. He desired only to reside quietly in his native country. The large sum that Ameres had handed over to the care of Jethro had been much diminished by the expenses of their long journey, but there was still ample to ensure for them all a good position in a country where money was not abundant. They learned that an Egyptian garrison still occupied the capital, that the people groaned under the exaction necessary to pay the annual tribute, and that General Amusis, who had seized the throne of the Rebu after the departure of the main Egyptian army, was in close intimacy with the Egyptian officials, and was in consequence extremely unpopular among the people. He had, on his accession to power, put to death all the relatives of the late king, and there could be little doubt that did he suspect that Amuba had returned from Egypt, he would not hesitate to remove him from his path. Amuba had several long consultations with Jethro as to his course. He repeated to him the conversation that he had had with his father on the day previous to the battle in which the latter was slain, how he had warned him against the ambition of Amusis, and advised him, rather than risk the chances of civil war in endeavoring to assert his rights, to collect a body of adherents and seek a new home in the far west. Jethro, however, was strongly of the opinion that the advice, although excellent at the time, was no longer appropriate. It is evident that for the good of the people, the present usurper should be overthrown and the lawful dynasty restored. Besides this, you cannot live in peace and contentment. You might at any moment be recognized and your life forfeited. I am sure your father would not have advocated the original plan under these changed circumstances. But I have no desire to be king, Amuba replied. You were born to be king, Prince Amuba. It is not a matter of your choice. You have had wide experience. You have an acquaintance with the manners and ways of our conquerors, and were you on the throne, you could do much for the people and could promote their welfare by encouraging new methods of agriculture and teaching them something of the civilization in Egypt. Moreover, I suppose you would hardly wish to drag Maisa with you on your journey to an unknown country, where all sorts of trials and struggles must unquestionably be encountered before you succeed in founding a new settlement. I suppose you would not propose leaving her here to whatever fate might befall her. I fancy, from what I have seen during the last 6 months, that you have altogether other intentions concerning her. Amuba was silent for some time. He said at last, "But if Amusis is supported by the Egyptians and is viewed by them as their ally, I should not be able to overthrow him without becoming involved in hostilities with them also. I should bring upon my country a fresh war with Egypt." "Egypt is, as we have found, a very long way off, Amuba. We lie at the most extreme limit of her power. Thutmose himself has gained sufficient glory. It is not likely he would again start on so long an expedition merely to bring so distant a corner of the land subject to Egypt again under her sway. Besides, Egypt has already learned to her cost. The Rebu are not to be overcome bloodlessly, and the defeat is just as likely as victory to attend her arms against us. Therefore, I do not think that the thought of the vengeance of Egypt should deter you. In other respects, the present occupation by them is in your favor, rather than otherwise, for you will appear before the people not only as their rightful king, but as their liberator from the hated Egyptian yoke. After a long silence, Amuba said, "You are right, Jethro. It is my duty to restore the land to freedom. What course do you think we should follow?" "I should journey through the land until we reach a port by the sea frequented by Persian traders, and should there leave Maissa and Ruth in charge of the family of some trustworthy trader in that country, until matters are settled. Cabron will, I am sure, insist upon sharing our fortunes. Our long wanderings have made a man of him. They have not only strengthened his frame and hardened his constitution, but they have given stability to his character. He is thoughtful and prudent, and his advice will always be valuable, while of his courage I have no more doubt than I have of yours. When we have left behind Ruth and Maissa, we will continue our journey through the land, and gradually put ourselves into communication with such governors of towns and other persons of influence as we may learn to be discontented with the present state of things, so that when we strike our blow, the whole country will declare for you at once. As we travel, we can gradually collect a body of determined men for the surprise of the capital. There must be numbers of our old friends and comrades still surviving, and there should be no difficulty in collecting a force capable of capturing the city by a surprise." Jethro's plans were carried out. He had little difficulty in discovering the sentiments of the principal men in the towns through which they passed. Introducing himself first to them as a Persian trader desirous of their protection, he soon disclosed to them his true identity. To many of them he was known either personally or by repute. He informed them that he had escaped from Egypt with Amuba, but he led them to believe that his companion was waiting in Persian territory until he learnt from him that the country was ripe for his appearance. His tidings were everywhere received with joy. The news that an attempt was at once to be made to overthrow the usurper and free the land of the Egyptians, and that at the proper time the rightful king would present himself and take command, was received with enthusiasm. In many cases, Jethro was urged to send at once for Amuba and to show him to the people. Jethro, however, declared that Amuba would bide his time, for a premature disclosure would enable the king to call together the army, and with the assistance of the Egyptians, Amusis might be able to form a successful resistance to a popular rising. Jethro said, "I intend, if possible, to collect a small force to seize the person of the usurper by surprise, and so paralyze resistance, in which case there would be only the Egyptians to deal with, and these could be dealt with long before assistance could reach them." In 6 weeks, the numbers of the enrolled had reached the point that was considered necessary for the enterprise, and the day was fixed on which they were to assemble among the hills a few miles distant from the town. Upon the appointed day, receiving each band as it arrived, Jethro formed them into companies and appointed their leaders. Cabron aided in the arrangements. But Amuba, by Jethro's advice, passed the day in a small tent that had been pitched in the center of the camp. By the evening, all the contingents had arrived, and Jethro saw with satisfaction the spirit that animated them all, and the useful, if somewhat rough, weapons that they had fashioned. When all had assembled, he drew them up in a body, and after a speech that excited their patriotic feeling to the utmost, he went to the tent, and leading Amuba forth, presented him to them as their king. As Amuba appeared at the door of the tent, a wild shout of greeting burst from the troops, and breaking their ranks, they rushed forward and hailed him as their king. It was a long time before the enthusiasm and excitement abated. Then Amuba addressed his followers, promising them deliverance from the Egyptian yoke and from the exorbitant taxation under which they had so long groaned. A week was spent in establishing order and discipline in the gathering. Trusted men were sent to the town to ascertain the exact position of affairs there. They returned with the intelligence that, although reports had been received that the late king's son had escaped captivity in Egypt and would shortly appear to claim his rights, the news had been received with absolute incredulity, the king and his Egyptian allies scoffing at the idea of a captive making his escape from Egypt and traversing the long intervening distance. So completely had been the quiet throughout the country since the Egyptian occupation, the garrison had ceased to take any precautions whatever. No watch was set, and the gates of the city were seldom closed, even at night. The plans were now finally arranged. Jethro, with a band of 200 men, was to enter the town in the daytime, some going down to the next port and arriving by sea, others entering singly through the gates. At midnight they were to assemble in the square near the palace, which was to be suddenly attacked. Amuba and the main body would approach the city late in the evening and station themselves near one of the gates. Jethro was to see that this gate was open and unguarded. If he found that it was closed and under charge of an Egyptian guard, he was to tell off 50 men of his command to attack and overpower the Egyptians and throw open the gate the instant they heard the trumpet, which was to be the signal for the attack of the palace. Jethro's party were, therefore, the first to start, going off in little groups, some to the neighboring ports, others directly to the city. Jethro also arranged that if at any time they should hear his call upon the horn, they were to hurry to the spot at the top of their speed. The men entered the town unnoticed and sauntered about singly or in pairs, and as their weapons were hidden they attracted no notice. Jethro went at once to the house of an old friend with whom he had already communicated by messenger. Here, from time to time, he received messages from his sub-leaders and learned that all was going well. He heard that the continual rumors from the country of the approaching return of the son of the late king had at last caused some anxiety to the usurper, who had that morning seized and thrown into prison several leading men who were known to be personally attached to the family of the late king. Not indeed that Amusis believed that Amuba could have returned, but he thought it possible that some impostor might be trading on his name. Several bodies of men had been dispatched from the town to the places whence these rumors had been received, to ascertain what truth there was in them, and to suppress at once any signs of revolt against the usurper's authority. This was highly satisfactory news to Jethro, as in the first place it showed that the king did not dream of danger in his capital, and in the second place it reduced the number of fighting men in the palace to a number only slightly exceeding the force at Jethro's own disposal. Jethro found also that some changes had taken place since he had last been there. The Egyptians had entirely cleared away the huts towards the end of the rock furthest from the sea, and had there erected large buildings for the use of the governor, officers, and troops. In addition, they had run a wall across from the walls on either side, entirely separating their Egyptian quarter from the rest of the town. Jethro's friend informed him that the erection of these buildings had greatly added to the hatred with which the Egyptians were regarded, as they had been erected with forced labor, the people being driven in by the thousands and compelled to work for many months at the buildings. Jethro learned that as soon as the inner wall was completed, the Egyptians had ceased to keep watch at the gates of the city walls, and that for the last year they had greatly relaxed their vigilance. By 9 o'clock, all was quiet in the town. Jethro sent out a messenger by the road by which Amuba's force would approach to tell him that the city walls were all unguarded, and that he had better enter by the gate half an hour before midnight, instead of waiting until he heard the signal for attack. Amuba could then move his men up close to the Egyptian wall, so as to attack that gate when the signal was given. Otherwise the Egyptians would be put on their guard by the sound of fighting at the palace before he could arrive at their gate. At the time he had named, Jethro went to the gate by which Amuba was to enter, and a minute or two later a dark mass of men, headed by Amuba, were at the gate. A guide was left with Amuba to direct him to the Egyptian wall. Jethro then returned to the rendezvous, where his men were already drawn up in order. Midnight was now close at hand. Quietly the band crossed the square to the gate of the palace. Then Jethro gave a loud blast of his horn, and in an instant a party of men armed with heavy axes rushed forward and began to hew down the gate. As the thundering noise rose on the night air, cries of terror and the shouts of officers were heard within the royal enclosure. Then men came hurrying along the wall, and arrows began to fall among the assailants. But by this time the work of the axemen was nearly done, and 5 minutes after the first blows were struck, the massive gates fell, and Jethro rushed in at the head of his band. The garrison, headed by the usurper himself, endeavored to stem their inrush, but taken by surprise, half-armed, and ignorant of the numbers of their assailants, they could not long withstand the determined onslaught of Jethro's men. Jethro himself made his way through the crowd of fighting men and engaged in a hand-to-hand fight with Amusis, who, furious with rage and despair at the sudden capture of the palace, fought wildly. But at last the usurper fell before Jethro's strong arm. The fall of Amusis was for the moment unnoticed in the darkness and confusion, but Jethro shouted to his men to hold their hands and fall back. Then he called upon the garrison to surrender, telling them that Amusis was dead and that Amuba, son of the late king, had arrived and was now king of the Ribu. He told them, "We do not want war against our own people. Join us and make common cause against the Egyptians, who are even now being attacked by our young king." The soldiers of the garrison were only too glad to accept the terms. They were delighted to escape the prospect of death and to swear allegiance to their rightful king. Shouts of "Long live Amuba, king of the Ribu!" rose from them. "Form up under your captains," Jethro commanded. "Follow us." It was only 10 minutes from the moment when Jethro's horn had given the signal for attack to that when he led his combined force to the assistance of Amuba. When he reached the wall that separated the Egyptian barracks from the rest of the town, he found that Amuba had entered without resistance and had captured 2 or 3 buildings nearest to the gate, surprising and capturing their occupants. But beyond that he had made no progress. The Egyptians were veterans in warfare, and after the first moment of surprise they had recovered their coolness and with their flights of arrows so swept the open spaces between the buildings that the Ribu could make no progress. Jethro ordered the troops who had just joined him, all of whom carried bows and arrows, to ascend the walls and open fire upon the buildings occupied by the Egyptians. Then with his own band he joined Amuba. "All has gone well," he reported. "The palace is captured and Amusis slain. I would do nothing further tonight. The Egyptians are 4,000 strong, while we have half that number. I will send messengers at once to the governors of all the towns and to our friends there that you are proclaimed king, and I'll order them to march here at once with every man capable of bearing arms." Amuba agreed. "In 3 days we shall have 20,000 men here. The Egyptians, finding their position hopeless, will surrender, whereas if we attack now we may be repulsed."
"Yes," said Jethro, "or you might be slain. In that case the country, left without its leader, would fall again into slavery."
Orders were at once issued to the men to desist from further assaults, but to content themselves with repelling any attacks the Egyptians might make. In the morning, Amuba ordered some green branches to be elevated on the flat terrace of the house he occupied. That signal was observed, and the fire of the Egyptians ceased. As soon as it did so, Jethro presented himself on the terrace, and a minute or two later, the Egyptian governor appeared on the terrace of the opposite building. Not a little surprised was he to hear himself addressed in his own language.
"In the name of King Amuba, lawful ruler of the Ribu, I, Jethro, his general, summon you to surrender. The usurper Amusis is dead, and the whole land has risen against you. Resistance can only result in the death of every Egyptian under your orders. There is no possibility that assistance can reach you. No messenger could pass the watchers in the plain, and could they do so, your nearest force is hundreds of miles away. In the name of the king, I offer to allow you to depart, carrying with you your arms and standards. The tribute which your king laid upon this land is far more than it can pay. But our king will be willing to send every year to the nearest garrison to his frontiers a tribute of gold and precious stones of 1/5 that value. This he will do as a proof of the honor in which he holds your great nation and as a recognition of its great power. The king further orders me to say that he will give you until tomorrow morning to reflect over his offer. If it is refused, the whole garrison must be put to the sword." And so saying, Jethro descended from the terrace, leaving the Egyptians to consider the terms he proposed.